Welcome, all you MCU fans, to the latest edition of True Believers here on the Fandom Podcast Network, the podcast that brings you all the latest news and reviews and things that are happening in the MCU. But I cannot cover all these things by myself. Luckily, though, fresh from the lily pad, I have got my partner, my fellow co-founder in the Fandom Podcast Network, and a man who knows how to properly fuel his suit's ankle jets, one Mr. Kevin Reitzel.
Oh, man, God, I just lost out a bid on eBay for a Wakanda letter opener to some guy named Todd. All the time he snipes me, dude. Ugh, hate that guy.
It's probably for the best, because Secret Wakandan security would show up at your door because they make all that stuff out of vibranium and they don't like it when it gets out there in the open like that. So you're probably better off.
It's just a letter opener, though. Are they really going to want one of those? Even if it's gone missing, it's just a letter opener.
Would think, but do you want to cross the Black Panther? I'm just saying, I'm keen on that one myself. How are you doing, good sir?
I'm doing good. I'm really enjoying She-Hulk. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. And I'm looking forward to talking about this episode, because apparently I was wrong, Kyle. I don't know if you know this or not, but our good friend Kat posted to something on, or was replying to something on Facebook regarding, you know, people wanting to see Charlie Cox and Daredevil in this because we've been teased. Like, just make it happen already. And then I said to him, look, you know, don't expect him to be in all this episode. He's probably just going to make a quick appearance and then get out. And then Kat was like, I know, but I really want to see him. Well, I was wrong.
and here I was going to say, this felt like a very horny episode of She-Hulk.
It was definitely a horny episode of She-Hulk in more than one way.
So, of course, yes, we are going to be covering all things She-Hulk with the latest episode, which is Ribbit and Rip It, which is Kevin's new battle cry. I think it's going to work for you, but I don't know if green's your color, man.
You know, I could probably still own it. I think so. Yeah. I just need to make sure that I have some vintage video games in my life.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I absolutely need the vintage video games. But before we go any farther with our conversation about the latest episode of She-Hulk, that is right. Massive spoiler warnings. We're going to be diving into episode 7 of She-Hulk from all the Daredevil angle of it, all the Todd angle of it, and definitely all the Leapfrog angle of it. Kevin might sneak in a game of Frogger during this podcast as well. So, of course, too, this is an interesting week for the MCU, Kevin, because not only do we have She-Hulk, which just came out today, Thursday, the day we're recording, tomorrow we have the first ever one-shot special presentation of the MCU, Werewolf by Night. I got to ask you, are you intrigued by this? Are you excited? They're doing a little something different here. It's all black and white. It looks like they're kind of playing up that 50s monster feel, movie type feel to it. I'm excited for this. I'm very intrigued by what they're going to do with this.
I barely remember the trailer for it, and I kind of blocked it out of my brain because I know nothing about it. I know we talked about it. Was it during the Moon Knight run of True Believers? And so I have no idea, but I'm going to watch it because it's the MCU, and I'm kind of curious and intrigued on how this is going to come across. So I that's really all I got. I can't say I'm excited for it, but I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I can say this. I know some of the early reviews have been coming out because the embargo ended, and they have been very positive on it. So they say something very different for Marvel, and they really like it. And I like the fact that we're getting something a little different. I'm excited for it. I like the fact it's Halloween. They're kind of going back to that black and white old style monster movie kind of feel to it.
Cool.
So, well, with that, guys, let's dive into the first episode of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, episode 8, Ribbit and Rip It. Kevin, I'm going to activate phase 1. It's all yours. Ribbit and Rip It, man.
All right. This is True Believers MCU podcast number 67. There we go. Yeah. She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, episode 8. Ribbit and Rip It. Episode aired October 6th, 2022. That's today as we speak, by the way. Okay. So here's our plot description. Walters takes on a new case representing Eugene Patilio, a.k.a. Leapfrog, who wishes to sue supersuit maker Luke Jacobson for having provided him a faulty supersuit. Where's my supersuit, woman? Sorry, that's what always came to my head, you know.
Yeah. I guess that's incredible, that, man. That's really incredible.
I see what you did there. Jacobson is represented by none other than Matt Murdock in court and manages to win the case due to Patilio's inadvertently revealing that he disobeyed Jacobson's instructions for using the suit. He used jet fuel to power his boots. Come on, what an idiot.
He's just trying to get a little extra boost in his jump, you know. there's other things he could have taken that would have probably done it for him, I'm just saying.
Yes. Afterwards, Patilio contacts Walters asking for help against an unknown assailant. Walters arrives and battles the assailant, who she discovers to be Murdock as his superhero persona, Daredevil, dressed in gold and red, as she said, ketchup collars, right?
Yeah. Sponsored by Heinz.
Yes. Murdock reveals to Walters that Patilio kidnapped Jacobson, and the two must work together to rescue the latter. Walter later sleeps with Murdock at her home after, of course, they do some Hulk smashing and some flirting up on the top and, you know, some hallway fighting, you know, some damaging of some, you know.
Wait. Is Daredevil the Mac Daddy of the Marvel Universe of the MCU at this point?
You know, case could be made for Jen as well. Anyway, yeah. I digress. We'll get into all that. She sleeps with Murdock at her home. The next day, Walter attends the Southern California Law Awards Gala, where she accepts the Female Lawyer of the Year Award. But the gala is interrupted by an intelligentsia broadcast, which smears Walter's reputation by displaying footage of her in bed with Miller. Walter goes into a rage and destroys the gala stage, then attempts to capture an intelligentsia member nearby. But she is stopped by the Department of Damage Control agents. So we had no post-credit scene, of course, but we did have some credit animation scenes of note, Kyle. We had Todd outbidding Leapfrog for the Wakanda spear, that bastard. Jen's bra and Daredevil mask on the nightstand. I thought that was kind of cute. And Daredevil doing the walk of shame, carrying his boots while Nikki was taking a picture. I'm going to get into the fourth wall stuff in a minute here, Kyle, but let's get your first reactions here.
Love this episode. Obviously, the big thing is Daredevil finally making his appearance. We knew it was coming. We got it. We'll get into that a little bit more. I really like a lot of the stuff they did with Jen in this episode because we see her still kind of feeling her way around after the events of last episode, but she's kind of getting into a little bit more of a groove. But now we see her kind of doing her superhero thing too and getting into the superhero thing. We see her wear her own super suit. Finally, we see her having a little bit of fun with that. Plus we see something that was hinted at all the way back in episode one that has been kind of, I think, lingering there, Kevin, is what happens when Jen loses control of her anger. And we see that happen in this episode, which of course is button pushed by the intelligentsia and the Hulk King. And I have a theory about the Hulk King before we're all said and done, but you can just feel this coming up in Jen throughout this episode. Even with all the great stuff that she had with Daredevil, Matt Murdock, you had the weird thing with Todd where he's hitting on her. You've got just some of the pressure she's starting to feel, her frustration with Leapfrog and everything like that. So yeah, I think they've done a great job of building this story to this point. I almost wish they would have done this last episode just so we had a little more time to flesh some things out, because we've got some stuff we got to take care of in the next episode. But overall, I absolutely love this episode. And Charlie Cox is back in the Daredevil suit, and Daredevil's in the MCU, and I couldn't be happier.
I really enjoyed this one. Probably my favorite. It was just not just because Charlie was in this as Daredevil, but it was just so funny. And we'll get into their chemistry a little bit later in the article and stuff that we're going to cover. But I just really enjoyed them chewing up the scenes together. And just a lot of the other things, too, especially with the Leapfrog guy and, you know, his lair and, you know, you know, wondering what to call his goons, and it was really funny.
Kevin, you don't want to be a tadpole?
and the discussion of here, you know, Matt correcting Jen, you know, no, goons are this and
henchmen are
henchmen are this. I thought that was really funny. So I
just want to say one of the best lines I thought in the show is when they're coming up on Leapfrog and they're having the legal discussion back and forth, and the Daredevils are like, oh, I just like watching a lot of legal dramas.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yes. So we had a lot of fourth wall breaking this. First of all, she is very uncomfortable with the relationship with Luke, the guy, what's his name? Luke Jacobson, who makes the super suit stuff. It's kind of stressful for her. She doesn't want to set him off. And she realizes that she has to kind of go against him. She goes, oh shit, looks at the camera. And then when Matt makes his first appearance, she looks and goes, who is this asshole? And then later when they meet in the bar and she's starting to dig on him, then he takes the call. She looks at the camera and says, we're all feeling this, right? It's just not me. And then Todd, she goes, ugh, you remember Todd, that gross tech bro with the She-Hulk fetish? That was pretty funny. And then later on, he's doing his stuff. He's kicking some ass there in the lily pad, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. What is it?
Yeah. The big neon sign.
Yeah. Subtle. She goes, this guy's kind of really doing it for me.
Okay. Now, I want to stop you for just a sec, Kevin, because before we get to the next fourth wall moment, because this might have been my favorite moment in this entire series. There was just something about how, because it was so prolonged breaking the fourth wall and how she's talking to you as the audience in this moment, I just absolutely loved this. And I think it was the best fourth wall breaking we've had in the show so far.
Well, of course, after she, she sleeps with Mr. Daredevil and he's taken off, and she comes walking in on the couch. She says, it's weird you guys are still here. She's looking at the camera. Doesn't it feel like this episode should be over? Then Nikki enters, reminding Jen to get ready for the Female Lawyer of the Year gala. And she has like all of her makeup bag and stuff like that. And then Jen looks back at the screen at us saying, seriously, what is this scene? This episode already came to a satisfying conclusion. Trust me. If you got that double entendre there, maybe it was just straight up. And she goes, oh, wait, we're doing the gala? That doesn't feel right. Is the next episode the finale? Oh, just like a tacked on set piece near the end of a season? This is the big twist, isn't it? But the question is, what kind of twist? That like that there's another Hulk, but this one's red? Or like I'm getting fridged? Whatever, I'm game.
The fact that she even brought up the fridged thing is just hilarious.
I need you to explain that. I was thinking fridge like Captain America got frozen.
No, this is a little different. So this has been a very long running thing in comic books about the treatment of female characters. Way, way back in the day when they introduced a Green Lantern in DC Comics by the name of Kyle Rayner, he kind of took over from Hal Jordan, the most famous of the Green Lanterns. He had a girlfriend in the first couple of issues, and she got killed by a supervillain who figured out who Kyle Rayner was, and he stuffed her in the fridge. And ever since, when a female character has been treated poorly, they call it getting that character fridged.
Oh, wow. Holy cow.
So it's a pretty heavy subject, actually.
Wow. That's a deep cut, but man, okay. Gotcha. Okay. And then we're going to get into the Red Hulk later, right? We'll do that later.
Yeah, we'll get into Red Hulk later.
And then at the very end, it's kind of subtle, but after She-Hulk breaks the screen with rage she hasn't shown since episode one, reduced to snarling, then breaks down the wall of the theater and threatens to kill a member who is filming her, the camera that is looking at her, she's kind of breaking the fourth wall right there in anger, Kyle. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So I got some things I want to talk about. First of all, Frogger and Leapfrogger arcade games. Vintage, bro!
That was great.
I love when like Daredevil's like, you know, we're going to, you know, trust me. I've done this before. You know, we're going to go in stealth-like. And I like how on top she's like, I'm going to do my thing. She's like dancing a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then she comes in and like smashes and she goes, She-Hulk, smash. Daredevil does a face palm. And then, of course, I like that. I love this line, but I added something extra to it. I want you to tell if you can tell what I added to it. Matt Daredevil says, hey, maybe next time I'm in town, I can take you out to dinner. You know, this is after when they're sitting on the underneath the neon sign there. Jen She-Hulk says, yeah, or maybe we can just skip that and just go back to my place and have hot, steamy lawyer superhero sex. Can you tell what I added?
Yeah, some hot, steamy lawyer superhero stuff.
That's what we're thinking, though, right?
No, we're not even thinking that. We know that. That's a legit thing.
I got to tell you, the Daredevil walk of shame was one of the funniest things I have ever seen in the MCU, because the fact that they actually did it in long shot, then it's brought up again later. But there's a very funny scene that I really like in the 21 Jump Street movie. Do you remember the 21 Jump Street movie? I think it might have been the first one where what's his name sleeps with the captain's daughter, but he doesn't know at the time. And he's doing the walk of shame at college and he sees all the other girls doing the same thing and they all take off their shoes and they walk. That's like a stereotypical walk of shame for ladies, is they take their shoes off. Guys have other stereotypical things, you know, maybe their shirts, you know, on backwards or off or whatever it is. But I thought that was one of the funniest things ever.
Yeah. Well, and this goes back to just a little bit of a fun thing. And it's something that's always been with the Daredevil character. Daredevil does very well with the ladies, whether he intends to or not. And sometimes the ladies don't make him the best decisions for himself. And in the comics, it's gotten him into some very serious problems over the years. To literally where certain super major villains in his character have found out his secret identity because of it and have caused him some serious grief. So, you know, Matt, ladies like you, you're charming. Daredevil's charming, but maybe you should just keep the pants on just a little bit more often. Get yourself
Comes to She-Hulk, man. Hit that. Come on, dude.
Just don't mess with my Tatiana. That's all I'm saying.
Dude, you're not doing the wet block on him on this. Let him have his fun. Come on.
I'm doing it because I know I can't compete anyway. It's Charlie Cox, Daredevil. Who stands a chance?
I love how you can see the progression, and this is Tatiana being a wonderful actress, of her as Jen, like slowly seeing the attraction she has for him when it comes to certain things. And you see the look on her face, the movements, you know, and then of course she's being obvious about it and talking to us, you know, breaking the fourth wall. But I want to talk about the cast real quick. And, you know, I don't know if we need to spend too much time on, what's his name? Leapfrog, played by Brandon Stanley. What do you know about Leapfrog, and did you like this interpretation of him?
This was a pretty fun interpretation of him. It was a little different than what we've seen in the comics. In the comics, he is the son of a person who was called Frogman, and he's the son. He calls himself Leapfrog. In the comics, he's just an uncoordinated loser. He's not rich, doesn't have all this gadget and stuff like that. But they kind of played up that angle anyway, where he's kind of just this crazy nerd, geeky fanboy, just trying to live his dream. I thought how they did this, though, was great, because it fits what the spirit of the character, with the kind of over-the-topness, because he's like, he has all this confidence because he thinks he's got this legacy and stuff like that. So it was fun. It worked pretty well. I have a feeling that if we have a second season of She-Hulk or maybe something else along the way, we could see Leapfrog return, because this is the kind of character that you could easily see going, this guy again? Wow, what's going on?
You know who I liked in this? I liked Griffin Matthews, who played Luke Jacobson, you know, the so-called super suit designer. I like this guy. He's funny. He was cracking me up. Especially his reactions to being captured. He's just like doing his thing, and the friction between, him and Jen at first. And I like this guy, but wouldn't this make him a target with villains of, like, you know, if they want to find out where superheroes are that he's worked with?
Yeah. That was kind of funny. No, I agree completely. Luke Richardson was great in this. What I loved about it too was the fact that the power he had over Jen.
With that
opening scene when she goes in to talk about the court case and he's like ripping the dress off. And
stuff. I don't remember the act, what she says verbatim, but at the end, hey, great having weird something friendship still with you or something like that. I can't remember what she said, but it was really, really funny because, you know, it was not the, you know, they're not best of friends. And so there's still some awkwardness there. And I like how that she mentioned that and said that. Anyone else in the cast? We got Marklyn Baker back and the parents back as well. Anything else in the cast you want to shout out?
I love the fact with Mallory back, even just for that brief moment when you just knew when they were going down and doing speeches and you were expecting it and she just nails it anyway. But I like that she's the one who's like, Jen, don't do it.
Yeah.
And trying to, you know, you would think that would come from Nikki, but it comes from Mallory. And I think that's kind of interesting. And of course, Ginger Gonzaga has just been great in this series. Can I interest you in my Swiss Army knife of makeup kits, Claus?
We're going to get to that later. All right. Well, let's get into some article review. Our friends over there, Den of Geek, Lacey Bauer is back talking episode 8, Ribbit and Rippit. Matt Murdock finally returns to the MCU television universe in She-Hulk's best episode of the season. She goes on to say, after weeks of open hints and backhanded teases, Daredevil's Matt Murdock finally returns to the Marvel television universe in She-Hulk Attorney at Law. And it probably won't surprise anyone to learn that Ribbit and Rippit is the series' best episode yet. But although Daredevil's long-awaited appearance is note perfect, and goodness, I've missed Charlie Cox's sly snark. What makes this episode of She-Hulk sing is that it finally achieves what feels like a perfect balance of thrilling action and offbeat procedural humor. Set within the larger question of what it means for Jennifer Walters to be not just a female superhero, but a female Hulk. Throughout the series' first season, She-Hulk has been at its best, spotlighting the bizarre D-list superheroes that have come through Jen's firm, and Eugene Petilio is one of the most ridiculous. A spoiled rich kid who moonlights as Leapfrog, a supposed hero with one of the dumbest catchphrases in existence, and an outfit that looks like nothing so much as a bad Super Mario Brothers 3 cosplay. Ouch. He's eager to sue when a supposed suit malfunction leaves him with a severe leg burns. The problem is his tailor is Luke Jacobson, who also made Jen's She-Hulk suits, and everything gets awkward extremely quickly. Ribbit and Rippit also does a great job of conveying what makes Matt Murdock such a great character without leaning too hard into. And that's what you missed on Daredevil exposition, offering viewers and unfamiliar with the world of Hell's Kitchen a quick guide to who he is, how his powers work, and the extent of his lawyering ability. Jen finds herself equally matched in the courtroom, not to mention Matt's right about disclosing Luke's client list, even if it's part of his motive for suppressing it, is that himself is on it. He's on it. And in the superhero realm, when she ends up facing off with Daredevil in a fight after incorrectly assuming the Horned Vigilante was attacking Eugene, not realizing that her former client had in fact kidnapped her former tailor. Superhero life is messy, is what I'm saying. It's a satisfying fight scene showing off the best of both characters' abilities and giving us some great banter in the meantime. Cox has delightful chemistry with Tatiana Maslany, and their flirty vibes are something I certainly wouldn't mind seeing more of in the future. Yes, please. Even if I am more of a Matt Electra shipper. This is really the first time we've gotten to see Jen paired romantically with someone who feels like a potential equal partner, both in terms of their intelligence and superhero ability. And it's a breath of fresh air. So I want to stop there, Kyle, because I want to talk about their chemistry. with Matt and Jen, and you know how you could obviously see why they're attracted to each other, but boy, man, they were going back and forth with some funny jibs and jabs and the whole heartbeat thing, and you know how she's indestructible, and you know, oh, I'm pointing at me, and he's like, I know, I've got that sonic thing going. I mean, it was just, it was so funny, Kyle. Your thoughts on how well, I'm assuming you agree with their chemistry.
Oh yeah, they had immense chemistry, and from everything I've read, they had a similar kind of chemistry actually on set as actors, where they were just playing off each other like that. Just, it felt, everybody said it felt so natural, and you hear the stories from the set when Charlie was on it, and they, everybody just raved about him being on set and how he was on set and so much. I mean, and you're talking about two very phenomenal actors in Charlie Cox and Tatiana Maslany. And I wonder how much of some of that banter was actually them ad-libbing a little bit and having some fun with it. I would love to find that out. But yeah, you could just feel the chemistry between them, and they just felt like a very natural fit when you see them together. And then you add in the fact with the lawyering and how the superhero side, where he's kind of the experienced hero trying to kind of teach her a little bit as well when he's doing a few things there. That was fun. And then, you know, just, yeah, you, and what I loved about it was both of them within the episode acknowledged the chemistry between them. And instead of one of them trying to play it off, you know, like Matt Murdock trying to play it off because I'm Daredevil and I'm cool, or, you know, Jen trying to play it off because, you know, she's trying to impress the guy or something like that. It was the fact that they both showed it made it work that much more.
Yeah, definitely. And it's the chemistry was so fun to watch, and you were speculating whether or not, you know, some of this was ad-libbed, whether it was or not. Even if, you know, a lot of this I'm sure was, you know, written the way it was said, and maybe they kind of changed a few things here and there. That was done really well, because you're really getting a feeling for Jen's character in the way that she's talking to Matt, and with a lot of her humor, her character is really fleshed out. We're somewhat familiar with Matt Murdock and what he's like and how funny he can be with the Netflix series. But it was interesting to kind of see it be a, I think somewhat, at least when it comes to the lawyering side of things, seemed kind of like an easy transition from the Netflix to the MCU. But we'll get into the more of that a little bit later. I know you wanted to talk about what some of the fans might be thinking or saying. But I absolutely love the chemistry. It was it was actually my favorite part of the episode. Yes. Oh, the action was great. Right. You know?
Oh yeah.
Jen in her super suit looking awesome. And even Jen, when she was not Hulk, was looking great too. You know, obviously spandex.
Yeah. It's always your friend.
The article goes on to talk more about Intelligentsia. We'll get into that a little bit later of what we may see and stuff like that. But, and then touches on the angry side of her as well, which we will also go into a little bit later. But anything else that you want to mention, Kyle?
I think we hit on it, because I think we hit with the chemistry. I think the chemistry between Matt and Jen is phenomenal, and obviously everything with it. And this is what made this episode, I think, so fun. But I really do think, and I know we'll hit on it here in a little bit, there's a lot more to the Intelligentsia stuff that's going on, and I have some thoughts on that. We'll hit when we hit the next.
Okay, phase. So Intelligentsia, Matt Murdock, and fans. There's something else you want to mention, because I don't want to forget these. Write them down.
Yeah, Intelligentsia, Matt Murdock, fans. I think that kind of covers the big three things I need to hit.
But first, we've got phase two trivia. Okay, Kyle. I sent you a picture this morning. You caught it. Astute fans caught it. Your cat behind you caught it.
Yep. Sorry about that. They've been a little traumatized from Ian. They aren't really leaving don't like it when I leave their side, guys. Okay. So I apologize for that.
Understood. But anyway, when Nikki comes over to help Jen get ready for the gala, she comes out with her makeup items, you know, the eye brush, whatever it is. And she's holding them between her fingers, like a certain, I don't know, Wolverine-y type character. Are they just messing with us here, Kyle? What's going on?
There's been some artists who've had some fun with Wolverine in the past and some comedic things where they've made his claws more like a Swiss Army knife where different things would pop out in like jokey fashion, you know, in some of the joke comics. So I think it's kind of playing up on that. But considering the Wolverine news we had this week, yeah. Thank you, Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman.
So what you're saying kind of is the Hugh Jackman Wolverine news with Ryan, you think, are you saying that this was planned to come out so when this scene came in, it would click a lot better?
I don't know about that, but I think it's there's
yes. Ryan Reynolds, you're supposed to say yes to that, Kyle. That was you just answered that question wrong. Oh. They know what they're doing. They're setting this up. They knew that this scene was coming, that Nikki was going to do her thing, you know, and they released the whole, you know, Deadpool and Wolverine coming up, and that's what they're doing. She'll say yes to that. Anyway.
Okay. Well, I don't know if Ryan Reynolds, anything's possible.
First appearance of Daredevil, not just Matt Murdock, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, of course, played by Charlie Cox, reprising his role from the Netflix series. Unlike the series, however, his outfit here matches the original appearance in comics of 1964. Kyle, we got teased with this in an earlier episode with Jacobson having the box and having his horned helmet in there. What does this mean to fans?
I think this is part of something I'm going to talk about a little bit later, but I think this is where we're kind of feeling the soft reboot of Daredevil from the Netflix series, is the fact that we're getting Daredevil in his original costume that he started out with, this yellow and red costume, which eventually becomes the all red costume later on. So I think we're kind of seeing an early version of Daredevil because it's in the MCU. And what we're going to see is eventually, whether it's in Echo or in Born Again, see him go to his more traditional all red costume. But we're seeing like what the early version of Daredevil was, even in the comics. And I think it's part of, like I said, this soft reboot that they've been trying to do with some of these Daredevil characters. We kind of saw it with the Kingpin in Hawkeye as well. So
okay,
I think it ties into that.
The sound effects of Leapfrog's jet boots breaking down in the same sound effect of the Millennium Falcon breaking down from Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. This episode recreates the iconic Daredevil hallway fight scene from Daredevil 2015. However, it was far less violent and shorter. I have a question for you though, Kyle.
Okay.
I don't remember in the Netflix series, but correct me if I'm wrong, because I probably am. I loved how he uses baton to where he flicked it and one end went all the way out with a tether, hit a guy, and then came shooting back into this little small staff form. I don't remember that in the Netflix series. Am I remembering that wrong?
There was a fight scene in the second season of Daredevil that used some of those things with the club. Because remember, he didn't really get the club until the very end of season one of Daredevil.
And yeah, the whole fight was just him just punching and kicking people and stuff like that. So, yeah.
But I just got to say, I love how they did this because they played up on it, but had a little fun bringing in Jen with the She-Hulk smash right as we're about to think we're going to get this classic beatdown.
He's so like, She-Hulk smash, facepalm.
Yeah. So they had a lot of fun with it, and I love the fact that they did that because they even pulled a little bit of that Netflix music from that fight scene, too. I was having fun with that.
The sex tape scene between Jen and Josh is shown in the episode, making She-Hulk Attorney at Law the first MCU TV show and the fourth overall MCU installment following Iron Man 2008, The Incredible Hulk 2008, and Eternals 2021 to feature a sex scene.
So I know Iron Man it's referred to, but I don't actually remember an actual sex scene in Iron Man.
I can only assume when he beds the Vanity Fair reporter and she's in bed, maybe. I don't know.
I think the next more waking up the next morning is the kind of inference. And of course, you know, it can go all the way in the Incredible Hulk because of other problems.
Yes, that's true. Yes. Anyway, that's all I got for trivia right now, Kyle. Take us to the break.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to take a quick break here and tell you what else is going on around the Fandom Podcast Network. But when we come back, we are going to be talking about a lot of things within the plot, including more Daredevil conversation. But for now, here's what's happening on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Yeah, that's right. Poison darts like the tree frogs. Okay, we're good. We got it. Okay, thanks. Well, I'll send somebody over. And are you still dry cleaning the porcupine suit? Okay, good. I just want to make that sure that smells at least passable. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Bye. Sorry about that, Kevin. That was my designer.
I was wondering who you're calling because you're talking about poison darts and then porcupine suits that need to be cleaned. So, okay. So, poisoned porcupine quills?
Sure, why not? Hey, there's got to be some exotic animal that has porcupine that has that somewhere. And Tatiana won't stop returning my calls, so I don't know what's going on. So. With that, all sir. Right.
Kyle?
Go ahead. I was just going to say with that, sir.
I'm sorry. Is my turn? Are you going to talk or am I going to talk? You going to talk?
We'll let you talk.
Well, let's head into phase three now. The big one. Here we go. All right. This is phase three, our plot analysis, ties to the MCU and comics, among other things. So we got, first of all, you know, we've touched on the plot analysis here, but we got to talk about ties to the MCU first. Sokovia Accords have been repealed. That was mentioned in the court proceeding. So that was interesting. We'll tie to the MCU there. Todd wins a Wakanda war spear for $1 million. And then he awkwardly says Wakanda forever.
I just can't do that. I'm sorry. I just can't.
A Wakanda war spear. How does that get out of Wakanda? And that's okay.
I'm thinking there's probably one or two that snuck out after the battle of Thanos at the end of Endgame, you know.
Yeah,
probably possibly. A couple laying in the rubble, something like that.
I love it when Leapfrog is inside his lair, lily pad or whatever it's called, and Jacobson's sewing his suit, and he's like, I want to get this suit and maybe have like some fancy AI that sounds British and talks to you.
That was good too.
When chatting with Jennifer at the bar, Matt notes that he primarily works in Hell's Kitchen, New York. So Kyle, my question to you is, are they going to let anything in the Netflix series stand, or are we just mentioning Hell's Kitchen and that's it?
I think the things that were like Daredevil pieces like Hell's Kitchen, we'll see Foggy Nelson return, Karen Page return.
Okay.
But I think as far as the events of the Daredevil series, I kind of figured those are kind of out with the bathwater, kind of what Star Wars has done with their, this is canon, but now they're kind of slowly bringing back in the pieces they want.
Does that mean that we will get a new Elektra back, or maybe someone that we liked that was Elektra to come back and reprise her role?
Well, so far, if you go by the rumors, a lot of the cast from the Netflix Daredevil series is either confirmed to be coming back or is in strong negotiations to come back. So cool. I think in the case of Elektra with Elodie Young, that's a little bit of a tough one because she's really kind of blown up since Daredevil came out, and she's become a little bit bigger actress. She has a lot on her plate, but I would love
to see don't her care. Throw her a bag of money. Make her come back.
Anyway. I'd much prefer, honestly, if it was going to get my way, I'd much rather see Jessica Henwick return as Colleen Wing. And of course, lovely Rosario Dawson return as the Night Nurse.
Yeah, bring them all in. Definitely. Yeah. So, yeah. In the first episode, Bruce warned Jen that, quote, when people start seeing you as a monster, that never goes away. By the end of the episode, Jen's entirely justified, but very public freakout seems to have had that effect. So, yeah, we'll tie back into the earlier episode there. Kyle, I don't know if there was any other MCU ties that you noticed that I might have missed.
No, I think you hit on all of them. I do think it's very interesting you brought up the Sokovia Accords having been repealed. You think that's because of the events of Avengers Endgame?
Because I would think so.
Yeah.
Because there would be no existence of anyone because of that. So, yeah, you know, it's just... And there's just so much. I mean, what are you going to do? Like every time someone like Thor comes back or, you know, from, you know, some planet, what are you going to do? You're going to make them sign something, you know?
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Let's. Okay. What was on the docket you want to talk about, Kyle? You want to talk about, obviously, some fan reaction to Daredevil.
Yeah, let's start there. Let's start with the fan reaction to Daredevil. Okay. Because I think this is important.
You said that you messaged me saying that there might be some fans that are a little upset, maybe. Oh, my God. Seriously? Upset about nerdy stuff? What?
I've seen some fans upset because this Daredevil isn't like the Netflix Daredevil. And some people are complaining, oh, he's too jokey and stuff like that. And I need to throw this out because I mentioned it a little bit earlier. What you need to understand is Marvel has never said that this Daredevil is the Netflix Daredevil. It's Daredevil, the character. And as we talked about a little bit earlier when we were talking about the suit, it's very obviously, yes, they had a phenomenal actor in Charlie Cox, and thank God he's come back as Daredevil. He was phenomenal in the Netflix series. I love the Netflix series. I will ride home on the Netflix series until my dying day. I think it was a phenomenal thing. But this is a different Daredevil for a true MCU. And this is a Daredevil who, when the character was first introduced back in the day, was a little bit more lighthearted, had a bit of a sarcastic sense of humor, had a particular type of confidence to him. Now, you get a darker Daredevil much later after some of the stuff he goes through, especially what Frank Miller puts him through in the Born Again storyline, which is something that is coming to the MCU.
So what you're saying is, Kyle, that they're actually being true to the comics?
Yeah, go figure. And the aspect too of one of the things that is so great about Charlie Cox is he plays that little bit of smirky and sarcasm very well, but not in that point where you're just like, God, this guy's kind of a jerk because of how he is. He's so likable. And if you've ever had the honor and pleasure of meeting Charlie Cox at a con or in person somewhere, he is one of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet. And to give you folks out there an idea of how much he loved playing Daredevil, he was literally turning down jobs left and right because Kevin Feige just said, please have patience. We got something in the works. And it finally paid off. And if you see comments from Charlie Cox, how much he thanks Kevin Feige for basically letting him continue his career as Daredevil.
Nice. I'm wondering, curious how that worked. Like, you know, did Feige like send him a down payment, you know, and say, yeah, just sit on this little pile of money for a little bit here, you know, trust me, we'll get you back. So, okay, well, that's good because when I went into this, I knew that there was going to be changes, not just, you know, aesthetically with what he was wearing, but that, you know, we got this really kind of dark brooding, and I love how she called him out. Oh, ooh, how brooding, you know, when they were together. Mm-hmm. But you know, I didn't even think about how, you know, it would be different from the comics because I always assume that it's different from the comics. They use the comics as kind of a guideline, you know? Mm-hmm. I forget the quote that Barbossa says to Jack in the Pirates of the Caribbean film. It's more of a guideline. But I was just pleasantly surprised how funny and charming he was. A little cocky, but not like cocky asshole like, you know. And how well the chemistry, as we mentioned earlier, with Jen. And I just thought it was really, really done really, really well with bringing him into the MCU, giving us, you know, a little bit of background on his powers, but not too much, a little tiny exposition, which is fine. You know, for people that don't know who he is and maybe you're watching him for the first time in She-Hulk, they're like, wait a minute, he's blind? How? And then she calls him out. Oh, are you pretending to be blind? He's like, no, I've got this, blah, blah, blah. And then she says, oh, you mean like this? He's like, eh, sort of, blah, blah. And I thought that was great. And it, I kind of like this fun Matt Murdock who's willing to do a walk of shame. It was great. I love it.
We even got a little taste of it in the Spider-Man No Way Home film when he's catching the brick that's thrown,
yeah,
thrown through the window, yeah. And like they're all, yeah, kind of looking, and he's like, "What?"
Yeah.
So I did enjoy that very much.
All right, Kyle, what else did you want to touch on?
I want to touch on Intelligentsia because I obviously the big bads of the season of She-Hulk. But I've got a theory, Kevin. I've always said the Intelligentsia was kind of tied into the leader. I still believe that because I think that we are heading to some things in here that will lead into Captain America, the New World Order.
Just to clarify, you also wanted to touch on this Red Hulk thing. Is this tied into what you're going to talk about, or is that a separate subject?
No, that's a separate thing. I want to
Intelligentsia. Go.
Okay. We've seen at King Hulk a few times, yes, now.
On the text thing, yes.
On the text thing. I have a theory of who King Hulk is.
Okay.
I think King Hulk is Todd.
Ooh. Ooh. That makes sense. Why didn't I think of that?
He has a She-Hulk obsession. He makes a move on Jen in this episode. Doesn't go well.
I'm going to defend myself a little bit because, Kyle, usually I have a full day of doing research on the internet-y, webby thingy before stuff comes up, you know? But we're doing this at the day of the actual release, so I didn't have much time. I may have gotten that, but I like that. Todd being bad. I like it.
The pieces kind of fit, especially, you know, he's got tons of money. He's getting a ton in spheres.
Yeah.
I think he could be, at least be a pawn of the leader, kind of like handling this branch of Intelligentsia to try to embarrass She-Hulk. For embarrassing him or not going out with him or something like that. I think that could be a little bit of jealousy, a little bit of rejectionitis going on here a little bit, as well as whatever bigger thing is going on with the Intelligentsia and what I think will tie into Captain America New World Order, which I too believe Jennifer Walters will make an appearance in.
Well, she has to, because she has, and I like that it was used against her, the fact that her home screen is Captain America's butt.
Yeah, exactly. Let's address the other thing I want to address too is the Red Hulk in the room. She mentions that as kind of more of a joke thing right now, but obviously the Red Hulk, who in the comics was Thunderbolt Ross, who has a long history with Bruce Banner and the Hulks and everything like that. And there's been a lot of speculation that they will recast the role of Thunderbolt Ross still for Thunderbolts and incorporate the Red Hulk into Thunderbolts. I think it's still a possibility. There's been some Harrison Ford rumors out there. There's been some rumors of something else. But I think it was also the She-Hulk writers having a little fun with that line, with considering the other stuff she talked about getting fridged and things like that. But yeah, just to throw out the Red Hulk, all I'm going to say is don't make too much of it, but don't pretend she didn't say it either.
Okay. Is it possible, let's say your Todd theory, and your Todd theory is very strong, by the way. I'm going to go with that for a second. Is it possible, though, that there could be a Red Hulk, since we got a King Hulk, Red Hulk mentioned, that actually might be teased? Could we actually see a Red Hulk situation in this, or is that too big of a villain to showcase in a TV series?
I think it's too big of a thing to give us a look at in a TV series. And I really think that when they introduce Red Hulk, if they want to really have the budget to do the real proper CG type CGI with him and a higher movie budget for that. But I could easily see where we have a stinger and there's a tease and a stinger. I think that's a very distinct possibility.
Okay. Well, you know what? If there's anything else you want to talk in phase 3, Kyle, we could go to phase 4 and look into next week.
Let's look into next week.
All right, let's do this. All right. Before we look into next week, Ribbit and Ripit, Kyle, final thoughts.
I absolutely loved it. I think the best episode of She-Hulk since the first episode. And I love the first episode. I'm excited for Daredevil. I love the chemistry between Charlie Cox and Tatiana Maslany. And, you know, I just, again, I've said this from the start. I mean, and I know I have bias towards Tatiana from my love of Orphan Black and everything she does, but I hope this is an eye opener for a lot of people who've never been exposed to her, because she is so phenomenal in this. And if you're a red-blooded American male and you're not coming out of She-Hulk with crushing a little bit on Tatiana, I don't know what's wrong. Something's wrong with you, because she's the girl next door. She's just got a chemistry that works so well with everybody around her. And she's such a phenomenal actress.
You know, it's funny you say that, Kyle, because you know how when you come across a character in a show that you're enjoying, you're going, what else have they been in? You might go back and kind of like rewatch stuff. And the same thing happened to me when we were watching The Boys, and you're saying, well, you got to watch this show called Banshee because of Anthony Starr, who plays Homelander, and who I actually like better in Banshee. And Banshee is great freaking series, lasted 4 seasons, and it's sitting over there on my shelf in the Blu-ray collection. But I you know what? I know I've been putting it off for so long. I want to do a proper rewatch of this series that you speak of, that she won an Emmy for, which is Orphan Black. And I have it, just haven't gotten around to finishing it. I started it, but I do want to encourage people and look at myself when I say this, you got to watch her work, you know, and I want to see what else she's done as well, because she's very charming as this character. And I still feel that you're getting a little bit of Tatiana in Jen Walters. Would you say that's correct, Kyle?
I think so. I think the kind of the fun loving, having a little bit of fun side is definitely Tatiana, because you see that in some of the characters that she played for Orphan Black as well. And again, if you want to see all the personality sides and acting ability of Tatiana, watch Orphan Black. I mean, the performance she plays, she pulls off in Orphan Black. You literally forget it's the same actress playing all these different roles. And that speaks phenomenal. And even in this, there's a part of me that really sees the differences between She-Hulk and Jennifer Walters at times too.
Yeah.
And how she kind of carries herself as She-Hulk compared to Jennifer Walters.
Question for you. Mm-hmm. Let's look ahead here. There's a couple things I want to touch on here. You touched upon a possible, you know, end credit scene with maybe something Red Hulk-y or Intelligentsia tied into Captain America, New World Order. The big head guy, what's his name?
The leader.
But let me ask you this. I was debating. I was when I first watched the episode, I thought that Matt Murdock's appearance in She-Hulk was done. He did his shot. He came in, done. And then now we're on to the season finale with Intelligentsia and her reputation in danger now. Is it possible that Matt Murdock might make another appearance in the next episode to maybe defend her in a legal sense or do something like that? Or do I'm kind of throwing this out at you, but you know, I think it's possible, but then there's a part of me saying, nah, he's done now. We're going to have to wait to see him in something else. So,
here's the interesting thing. If you go on IMDb, Charlie Cox is listed as 3 episodes of She-Hulk.
Now, yeah, but they do that kind of guessing in the beginning, and then they fine tune it and change it when it actually airs. You know, like sometimes when they're not sure when a character's in, they might just say they're in one episode, but then when it comes out, they update it later. So you can't when the show's new, you can't go by what IMDb says on how many appearances that guest stars are going to take, unless you know it's Jen Walters, Tatiana. You know she's going to be in all 9.
But the reason why I say that, too, is here's a possibility. I'm just going to throw this out. Jen is obviously in some legal trouble now with damage control and things like that. I could see where it's Mallory who's defending her in court, but it's Matt Murdock's Daredevil who might be finding the evidence against the Intelligentsia to help Jen which gets her out and then leads maybe to a Daredevil Gen team up to take on whatever final threat the Intelligentsia throws at Jen in this series.
I feel like you're secretly writing the show and not telling me, Kyle. That was dope. That was good. That's dope. I like that. That was good. Yeah. It's better. I'm not sure. I didn't know what to think because I just know that we're going to find out more about Intelligentsia. But I like the idea that you said about Todd being part of it. But I'm wondering if there's someone else that we know already that's been introduced in the MCU prior to She-Hulk that might be part of this as well. That's what I'm kind of curious about.
I still believe we could. I wouldn't be surprised to see Tim Blake Nelson in an episode, in the final episode, some way, somehow, even if it's just for a brief moment. He's the one who played the leader in.
Oh, right. Sorry, he's not a household name yet.
Yeah. All I know is that I need one thing to happen in the next. Well, I need two things. I need in a Stinger something. We need to see Leapfrog at Abomination's retreat. In one of those therapy sessions.
Would be fun.
We need a moment of She-Hulk.
Hold on. He's going to go, hey, man, can I put a Frogger in the yurt?
Yeah, exactly. But more importantly, we need that moment of She-Hulk smash, Josh.
Yeah, well, he's definitely seems to be part of it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
He wronged her. She needs some payback. So yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
But I also do think we're going to get a moment for Nikki to shine in the final episode as well. So I'd be curious to see how that's going to play out. But
okay.
Let me ask you, Kevin, do you think every episode, I think this was the longest episode at 35 minutes this week. Do you think we hit 40 for the finale?
Kyle, I hate that. I you know what? I refuse to answer that question because I've been disappointed so many times on so-called episode lengths. Let's stop it.
I'm just making speculation. I'm not even trying to guess the length.
No,
I just think I would like to see them go 40. I would like to see them go 40. I'm not predicting it. I would like to see them do it and give it a little bit more room to breathe.
Are you counting 8 minutes of credit?
Well, if there's a bunch of stingers in it, yeah.
All right, Kyle, close this up.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you to Kevin for bringing us all the great notes and work that he does on the backside and front side of this episode. He takes great legal dictation too. I'm just saying, if you need a good court reporter or something like that, yeah, he does a pretty good job of that. But you know, you just got to deal with that nighttime hanging out at the lily pad and playing a lot of Frogger. It's good, but no, it's been a fun ride on She-Hulk. We got one episode left. I'm excited for it. I've absolutely loved this series and it's been so much good. But as we like to say around here to all of you true believers, grip it. And no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it, Kevin. I'm not going to do it. What we are going to say is Excelsior. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening and make ours Marvel.